This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 7th of September 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 7th of September 2012, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now we start with the announcements of What's On. And firstly, I must tell you there are some electric blanket safety checks being carried out by Hampshire County Council Trading Standards. There are various locations, mostly fire stations, throughout the autumn. And the best thing to do is to contact Jane Gulliver on 01962 833625. For an appointment near to you. So that's electric blanket safety check. Telephone Jane Gulliver on 01962 833625. In Winchester Cathedral, there is a lunchtime concert on Tuesday the 11th of September at 1 p.m. and it's by the Royal Academy of Music. It's a free concert with a retiring collection. The following day in Romsey Abbey, there's a lunchtime recital. That's Wednesday the 12th of September, also at 1 p.m. And that's entitled Royal Variations with Timothy Rogerson on the organ. And also in Romsey Abbey on Friday the 14th of September at 7:30 p.m, the Wainfleet Singers are doing a sacred oratorio conducted by composer David Owen Norris. Tickets for that event are obtainable from Romsey Tourist Information, and the telephone number is 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. At the Mayflower Southampton, Blood Brothers is running from Monday the 10th of September to Saturday the 22nd of September at 7:30 p.m. with matinees on Thursday and Saturday. That's Blood Brothers at the Mayflower ticket office, 02380 711 811. That's 02380 711 811. And lastly for the What's On, the Winchester Floral Design Society are celebrating Her Majesty the Queen and the Society's diamond anniversary with flowers at St Cross Chapel and the almshouses. That's in the beautiful Water Meadows of Winchester. It runs between the 4th and the 7th of October, so this is plenty of advance notice for you. It's open to visitors on Thursday, Friday and Saturday from 10:30 till 5:30 and Sunday from 12 noon to 4:30. That's October the 4th to the 7th. And if you want tickets and inquiries, its telephone number is at Winchester 851375. That's Catherine Secker. S-E-C-K-E-R. Catherine Secker, 01962 851375. That concludes the What's On. Lighting Up time ends on Friday the 7th of September at 6:29 a.m. and begins at 7:38 p.m. And on Wednesday the 12th of September, it ends at 6:37 a.m. and begins at 7:26 p.m. If you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. And don't forget, if you do not wish to listen to any particular item on the recording, just skip forward to the next track by pressing the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player. Now we come to the main headlines this week. Catchment areas to be redrawn. Cathedral's £19 million appeal. Sporty Elspeth turns gift of life into gold. And High Street facing double challenge. So, Nikki, maybe have the story behind the first headline, please.
Which is catchment areas to be redrawn. A massive shake-up of primary and secondary school catchment areas in Winchester is planned to cope with the pressure on places. Education chiefs are expected to go out to public consultation on proposed boundary changes this month. No details are yet available, but it is understood the review will involve all primaries in Winchester City and the three secondaries. The revised primary catchments will come into force in September 2014, when a new primary at the Westgate opens its doors to reception pupils and becomes the first county-run school for children aged 4 to 16. 1 in 10 reception children in Hampshire started schools this week, which were not their parents' first choice, although no child is without a place. Winchester has among the biggest squeeze on places, with 17% allocated second or third choice schools. Dozens of primary school pupils in Winchester City, and hundreds across the county, will be taught in temporary classrooms, as council bosses had to resort to emergency measures to provide enough places for all pupils entitled to one, as they are legally bound to do. At Weston, in full flood, the council concreted over part of a playing field to install a temporary double classroom, while an IT room has been converted into a classroom at St Peter's in Oliver's Battery. Temporary classrooms have also been installed at All Saints in Highcliffe, Winnell and Hairstock primaries. In total, an extra 74 places have been created for pupils starting this month and September 2013, including 30 at Weston, 10 each at Winnell and All Saints, 15 at St Peter's and 9 at Hairstock. Mum of three, Siobhan Hand, whose children attend Usselbury Primary, said, "My son is due to start at Westgate in 2013, but will my daughter be able to follow him there in 2 years? Will there be a free bus service, which is important if you live in a village? It's all up in the air. It is inevitable there will be changes, but like many parents, I would like my children to attend the same school." Children living in a school catchment area are given priority for places under the County Council's admission policy. Hampshire's education boss, Councillor Roy Perry, said the council was investing £10 million in creating hundreds of extra school places in Winchester City, including the new two-form entry primary at the Westgate. He said the council needed to review its admission arrangements to accommodate the new primary. Councillor Jackie Porter, Liberal Democrat opposition spokesman for Children's Services at the County Council, said, "It's going to be very unsettling for parents, but if a new primary is introduced in the centre of Winchester and those pupils are promised places at Westgate, then it is inevitable they will have to reconfigure secondary catchment areas." Councillor Porter added the Lib Dems will be pressing for the council to give priority for places at local secondaries to pupils in Winchester District after those living in the catchment area. At present, oversubscribed Kings and the Westgate include pupils from Southampton, Test Valley and Basingstoke. Winchester City Councillor Dominic Hiscock, Chair of Governors at Oversubscribed St Bede, warned redrawing catchment areas would not create extra places. The Lib Dem councillor said, "The new Westgate Primary will deal with the existing situation, for example, building on Chilbolton Avenue, but more than 2,000 new homes are planned in the city and there are no plans for how we will accommodate these children, which is why I am campaigning for a second new primary school." Earlier this year, the county was handed £9.8 million to create extra classroom places, but Council Chief says more government cash is needed to meet the shortfall.
Cathedral's £19 million appeal. Winchester Cathedral is set to launch one of the biggest public appeals in Hampshire history. The church needs to raise £19 million to pay for ambitious plans to raise the profile of its priceless history and repair its fragile fabric. The appeal will be launched at an evensong service at the church on September the 23rd. The Dean, the Very Reverend James Atwell, in the Keith Cathedral newsletter, urged churchgoers to attend. "Now is our moment of destiny, and it will require courage and commitment to rise to it." On September the 23rd, the Dean will reveal how much needs to be raised and how much has already been secured or promised. He's hopeful of a grant of £10 million from the Heritage Lottery Fund. An application is due to be made in spring 2013. Annabel Boys, Cathedral Receiver General, said yesterday, "The cathedral is at the heart of the community of Hampshire. It's a very special building. The money will help pay for the restoration of roofing, vaulting and windows." a three-level exhibition project, including the better display of the Winchester Bible, an investigation of the mortuary chests that contain the bones of Saxon kings, the refurbishment of the education centre, and the renewal of the sound system, wiring and lighting. It will be the biggest campaign the cathedral has launched since 1990, when the £7 million appeal under former Dean Trevor Beeson helped stave off bankruptcy. The new appeal will be overseen by the Winchester Cathedral Trust under the chairmanship of the Lord Lieutenant, Dame Mary Fagan.
Sporty Elspeth turns the gift of life into gold. She's no stranger to putting up a fight and winning. When she was barely a year old, Elspeth French was fighting for her life. A rare liver tumour had given doctors just 3 weeks to find the youngster a suitable liver donor that would save her life. But just 8 years later, and to the amazement of her family, Elspeth stood proudly on top of the rostrum, clutching a host of gold medals from the British Transplant Games. The sporty 9-year-old from Littleton excelled on the track, in the pool, and on the court, seeing her crowned best child competitor in the 9 to 11 age category. From gold in the 50 metre sprint and the 25 metre breaststroke to top spot in badminton, the obstacle courts and ball throw, all before finding the energy to compete in the 3 kilometre organ donor run, the Sparsholt primary school pupil proved she's making the most of her second chance. Elspeth said, "I was very happy to win. The 50 metres is my favourite and I love running at school. I like swimming too, after school, at the leisure centre. My mummy is very proud of me." For her parents, there was a time they feared they would never see Elspeth run around like any other child. For her first few years, hospital became a part of their lives, with her mum, Jackie, spending 100 nights on the ward with her as she battled the hepatoblastom. Mrs. French, a former midwife and nurse, who had to give up her job to look after Elspeth full-time, was told a transplant was inevitable because the disease was spreading. Elspeth was put on the donor list and was given 3 weeks for a suitable liver to become available. If one had not been found, Mrs. French would have undergone a transplant herself to donate part of her own liver. But just a week remaining, a donor was found, and she was given the transplant on June the 6th, 2004, at King's College Hospital, London, before returning to Southampton General for a further 3 cycles of aggressive chemotherapy. Elspeth was given the gift of life, and ever since then, she has lived it to the full. Proud mum, Jackie said, she is such an incredible girl who has overcome so much, and we're thrilled that she's done so well. Elspeth did exceptionally well at only her second transplant games, coming home with the silver cup for best child in the 9 to 11 years category. This year was the 35th British Transplant Games, the first of which took place in Hampshire in 1978, which saw 100 participants take part in the one-day event. Since then, it has grown to a 4-day annual event. This year, with more than 600 competitors aged from 2 to 80 years old, with nearly 1,000 spectators at the event at Medway in Kent last month. And, of course, accompanying this are two glorious pictures of this lovely little girl, Elspeth, one with her mum holding her silver cup and the other one leaping in the air for joy with her medals.
High Street facing a double challenge. One of Winchester's leading businessmen has warned of dangers to the High Street should the £100 million Silver Hill development go ahead. Jeremy France, who's run Jeremy France Jewellers in the High Street since 1990, commissioned his own report into the potential effects on his and other businesses. He said his findings revealed many High Street brand names could move into the new development, leaving empty units behind. Mr. France said, "You cannot build something that big and not affect the rest of the High Street. I've been to every single meeting about it to get a good and level view on it, and the overall view is it will most certainly improve Winchester and make it even more of a shopping destination. But there will almost certainly be a gravitational pull down the middle and lower end of the High Street." Mr. France also voiced his concerns over the high cost of rents for retailers in the city centre, which were hurting independent businesses. He said, "Winchester is a superb shopping destination, but the problem is the landlords are constantly driving up the rents and the turnover doesn't quite match the image of what the landlords think it will be. There's a problem in terms of turnover over the balance of what is real and what's assumed for a shop in Winchester. People assume it's all brilliant when they move in and agree to pay these high rents, and then they find out they cannot turn over what they need to break even. In recent months, James Martin's deli in the square closed after a steep rent increase, and Plain and Fancy Bar in Jury Street also shut." Mr. France added, "If Silver Hill is developed, it's extremely likely the brand name shops will leave, the High Street and go to the cheaper rents of the new development. That's what we're going to see, according to my report. We'll see a lot of empty shops start appearing, and that's the moment rents will start dropping." Mr. France said he may well have to move his business into the High Street or into Silver Hill if the development goes ahead, particularly if better signage is not brought in by the City Council to help shops at the top end of the High Street. He added he's been campaigning in vain for years for better signage for the upper end of the High Street, more recently through Winchester Business Improvement District. Speaking last month, Winchester Business Improvement District Executive Director Professor Chris Turner said high rents were a problem for the High Street. Now that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices and then Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment and first person. So firstly, the death announcements for this week. Ayers, Vera Ayers, who died peacefully on the 23rd of August, aged 81. Dando, Jen Dando, former resident of Aylesbury but died peacefully in Northamptonshire, aged 90. Gardner, John Barton Gardner, who died on the 31st of August after a short illness, aged 67. Hardy, Veronica Simpson Hardy, died peacefully at home on the 24th of August. Newbold, Martin Newbold, known as Jimmy, died unexpectedly at home, aged 56. Rolls, Herbert Terence Rolls, died peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 89. Taggart, May Taggart, died peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 89. And Tubb, Patricia Joyce Tubb, died peacefully on the 25th of August. And that concludes the death announcements. And now we move on to Christian comment read by Bobby.
Thank you, Keith. Christian comment this week is offered by Mary Gray, and she heads it Faith, Folk and Festivity. What a summer it's been, with the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, the Olympics, and now the Paralympics. What summed this up for me in a specifically Christian spirit was the Green Belt Festival at Cheltenham Racecourse during Bank Holiday weekend. I was there to speak on peace in the Israel-Palestine area. But this was one theme from many concerns on justice and peace, ranging from the Christian Aid double-decker tax bus that will now make its way around the country, to fair trade tea shops, to Operation Noah on climate change, and hundreds more. Entertainment featured worship, traditional and alternative, talks, music, including opera, art, sport, craft workshops, games for children. Justice and peace themes were central. Of course, the weather was an issue. As one participant commented, the worst happened. There was torrential rain, and it was still fantastic. In my own case, I spoke in a large tent in a thunderstorm. Yes, there was a microphone, but it had to compete with thunder and rain threatening to burst the roof open. The increasing mud underfoot rivaled the Glastonbury experience. This year's theme was Saving Paradise, the title of a book by Rita Brock and Rebecca Parker. They discussed how early Christianity rejoiced in symbols of life, trees, flowers, and fish, and only later did cross, sacrifice, and death become the focus. The theme inspired creative responses from ecological reflections on what we have done to the earth to how we find paradise in our own lives, the theme of the Sunday worship. What was overwhelming was the sense of excitement, even joy, that permeated the event. There was almost a carnival atmosphere. I saw a Rowan Williams lookalike on stilts. It evoked my memories of similar events I had experienced in Holland and Germany called Kirchendagen, church days in Holland, or Kirchentagen in German. A whole town or city would be taken over by Christian groups on an ecumenical basis. Every pub, cafe, school, football ground and so on would be a venue for an event, be it discussion, worship, talk, or action for justice. The sense that faith brought people together in a joyous way was the same as it was in Cheltenham. It makes me think that when Jesus commanded his followers to go out and spread the good news, that he really meant it was good news, joyous news, that would make us all really happy. And that's what Saving Paradise is all about. Living the gospel faithfully brings glimpses of paradise in the here and now. Green Belt was certainly a glimpse.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And from Chris Lagden, headed Irresponsible for staging exhibition. Sir, what on earth do the cathedral authorities at Winchester think they are doing, allowing a tendentious and one-sided climate change propaganda exercise to be staged in the cathedral? The organisers claim global warming due to fossil fuel consumption is leading to disaster and wish to remedy this by decarbonising the economy and bankrupting the country in the process. In fact, there is no global warming and hasn't been for over a decade. In spite of this, the Climate Change Act 2008 commits the country to a legally binding obligation to cut emissions by 80% at a staggering cost of £430 billion. No other major country proposes to follow us in this madness. Another effect of climate change alarmism is to put tens of thousands of people on marginal incomes into fueled poverty because of the taxpayer subsidies for useless wind turbines. These higher costs will put £1,000 per head on consumers' fuel bills by 2020. It really isn't very moral, let alone Christian, to drive old people into hypothermia and an early death in this way, and Winchester Cathedral should be thoroughly ashamed of itself for facilitating the promotion of this dangerous nonsense. Chris Lagden, Conservative Councillor for Totten.
This letter is from Alistair Marsden of Stanmore Lane, Winchester, who says, Stanmore is short on infrastructure. Sir, I write with a reference to the article on plans by Winchester City Council to sell off expensive council housing stock to fund new council housing into areas such as Stanmore. Quote from the Chronicle, August the 30th. Recent years have seen a reduction in both publicly and privately funded infrastructure in the area. The Stanmore Hotel and associated function rooms closed a couple of years ago. The new Queen's Head has not been open for months, and closure seems inevitable. This leaves Stanmore without a pub. The daily bus service has been cut, and the night service eliminated. Furthermore, the County Council withdrew £125,000 a year, and the City Council £25,000 a year funding from the Tower Arts Centre. The county also seems intent on withdrawing £35,000 a year from Stanmore Library. On the other hand, there has been little in the way of infrastructure. The new private dementia home meets a critical need in the district, and the job opportunities and extra funding to the City Council are welcome. But most residents of Stanmore are unlikely to be able to benefit from this service. I'm very proud to be a Stanmore resident. However, it does seem to have its share of social issues, and statistics show it is the most socially deprived ward in the district. In this context, whilst new homes are clearly needed, it's hard to justify additional social housing until substantial new infrastructure is put in place. Alistair Marsden, Stanmore Lane, Winchester.
A letter now from Keith Story, headed Honest Grading in GCSE English. Sir, the first reduction in grades of GCSE English should perhaps be welcomed by those who want pupils to be taught well and tested fairly. In recent years, we have seen the teaching profession, their union representatives and dishonourable politicians welcoming the annual improvement, when it's been blindingly obvious that standards of literacy have been falling. If anyone doubts the decline, they should consider the task faced by employers seeking workers who can speak and write good English. The rising number of universities needing to provide remedial English teaching is another clue. The evidence confronts us daily in the English written and spoken in books, magazines, advertisements, newspapers, and on radio and TV. Even in such a highly respected newspaper as the Hampshire Chronicle, I now expect errors in spelling or grammar on every page. Indeed, there was even a humorous error in the article about English grades in the issue of August the 30th. We adults have wrecked the environment and economy for the next generation. We should not also blight their prospects by pretending they have received a better education than in the period before grade inflation became convenient. With the money thrown at the education sector, it is disgraceful that pupils aged 16 are now only reaching a standard in English expected of an 11-year-old in the 1950s. Finally, if those who took their English exams in June were marked more honestly, or downgraded in teacher speak, than those who sat theirs in January, the remedy's obvious. Those generously marked in January should be remarked and downgraded also. Inflated grades may temporarily boost self-esteem, but high self-esteem built on a poor foundation of knowledge could lead to career disappointment, even personal tragedy. Certainly, local education chiefs should not be wasting taxpayers' money complaining about the return of more honest marking. And that is from Keith Story, St Cross Road, Winchester.
And this from Idris Francis, headed, "These speed limits will achieve nothing." Sir, I am astonished and appalled that now of all times, when many taxpayers are hanging on by their fingertips, pensioner bankruptcies have doubled and social services are cut, Hampshire County Council plans to spend £350,000, and who knows how much more, on unenforceable 20-mile-an-hour speed limits in Winchester that at best will achieve nothing and at worst will increase risk by making people feel safer when they are not. Much of the blame for these and similar schemes elsewhere rests, however, with Portsmouth City Council and the way they cherry-pick numbers from data for only 1 year in one small city's streets to announce encouraging signs when properly compared, trends were mostly worse or much worse than nationally. How curious, too, that the planned third-year report has been abandoned and the data ignored. I wonder why. Cost-effectiveness should surely be the watchword when spending public funds. At a time when 60,000-plus people die in hospitals every year through infection, incorrect medication, dehydration, starvation and inadequate monitoring, how many more lives would be saved or how much improved if these huge sums were spent instead in Hampshire's hospitals, even on mops, buckets and disinfectant, let alone on training equipment or operations? Having spent tens of thousands of hours studying road safety policies and results, I believe, as do other engineers with whom I share information, that while improved road and vehicle engineering have made massive contributions to the lowering of road risks, deaths relative to traffic volume are some 20 times lower than in 1950. Most other policies, whether from the DFT or councillors with bees in their bonnets, have been, when not positively harmful, hopelessly uncompetitive in cost-effectiveness terms in relation to other ways of improving our lives. And that from Idris Francis, Church Lane, West Meon.
Next letter is accompanied by a smallish picture of part of the high street with market stalls and a man walking, several men walking along, one of them obviously enjoying a burger in a wrapper. And it's headed, "Market stalls do nothing to enhance the beauty of Winchester." And it comes from Linda Patterson, who writes from Melbourne, Australia. "Sir, as a visitor to Winchester, I would like to express my dismay and disappointment at the market stalls in what used to be the nicest tourist-attracting part of the city. It was so much fun to amble up and down the pedestrian part of the high street. You could listen to buskers or bands, take photos, without feeling that you were blocking the path of passers-by. You could wander into any shop and find what you were looking for. You could sit inside or outside of any cafe or eating place without feeling harassed. Since the market stalls have been introduced, you have to jostle through a throng of people. It's so bad at times that you feel like buying nothing and going straight home. I also noticed that some shops have already closed. Apart from all that, the whole look is very messy, grubby and disorderly and does absolutely nothing to enhance the beautiful city that Winchester used to be. I have visited a few times in the past and no doubt will be visiting again as my son and his family live here. But I do wish the market could be relocated to a park somewhere to give us back the loveliest tourist part of Winchester. Apart from the fact that the shops have been long established and have to pay rates, they have helped to give Winchester its character. The market stalls do nothing to enhance its beauty. On the contrary, they take it away and cheapen and lower its standard. If people want to shop at market stalls, let them go elsewhere. Linda Patterson, Melbourne, Australia.
Up to parents to supervise videos, says Mandy Coleridge. So, read Christine Full James Madison's letter in the Chronicle of August the 23rd, urging a ban on violent computer games and videos. Growing children may later have to face a war, either serving in the armed forces or in a Third World War. Modern games and videos are not a lot different from Tom and Jerry, and parents should explain the reality and unreality of these games to their children. For example, if someone is killed, it is murder or manslaughter, and prison is the consequence, unless it takes place in the scenario of war combat. Video games keep children long occupied, as did a book before the age of computers. It's up to parents to monitor their children's games, or they will access them elsewhere, and probably for the worse. These things are easily available to children, and it's the parents' job to supervise, not criticise. That's from Mandy Coleridge, Winchester Road, Basingstoke.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we're going to step back in time. Nikki, can you start us off?
And this is 100 years ago, 1912. At Winchester County Bench, Louisa Harvey, an elderly widow of no fixed abode, pleaded guilty to stealing turnips from a field belonging to Mr. J. A. Pearson on the Eastern Road on August 22nd. P.C. Sturgis said he saw a defendant come from the field with something in her apron, which he found to be five turnips, and he charged her with stealing. She asked for leniency, saying it was the first time she'd done such a thing, and that she did it because she had no bread. And the second item. The health propagandist, Mr. Ernst Starr, has reached Winchester once more with his caravan and recommenced the lectures on the Broadway. On Thursday, he received an enthusiastic welcome from a big crowd. Winchester is apparently not tired of hearing Mr. Starr's message, though his definite views anent the failure of drugs to ever cure disease and the unsuitability of flesh as food for man roused much argument and discussion.
This is from 1962, 50 years ago, and is relevant to last Saturday. In a year which has seen so many of the larger agricultural shows suffer through inclement weather or indifferent support, it's refreshing to note an unpretentious event which has prospered through its deserved reputation for quality and friendliness. This was the case on Saturday, when in the most perfect conditions, the 41st Alsford Show once again proved an unqualified success. All day long, crowds poured into Tichborne Park, the beautiful home of the show's president, Sir Anthony Doughty Tichborne, Baronet, to eclipse last year's attendance total.
And nearer our time, 25 years ago, 1987, most Wintonians know William Walker was the diver who saved the cathedral in the early part of this century. Apart from that, little is known about him. But detective work by a Winchester man has unearthed many interesting facts, and one of them disturbing. Dr. John Patton found that the diver's grave in Beckenham is in a sorry state, and he has launched a campaign to raise the £500 required to put the headstone in good order. The grave is in the older part of Elmer's End Cemetery. And the second item. In line, it seems, with almost every other place in the country, the lovely little town of Alsford is losing its battle against the litter louts. Mrs. Virginia Keyhampton, who is staying with her mother in DeLucy Avenue, was so incensed by the amount of litter she fished out of the ford in Spring Gardens that she placed a postcard in the newsagent's window in West Street listing the sundry items she had taken to the council dump.
Thank you. And one final article on historical items is actually from 1966. So it doesn't fit in the pattern of 25 or 50 years. It's the royal opening for police headquarters, which, of course, is due for demolition shortly once police headquarters has moved out. So it's from the Chronicle, Saturday, June the 4th, 1966. Summer dresses, shady hats and a gentle breeze greeted Her Royal Highness Princess Margaret when she came to Winchester on Wednesday to open the new £400,000 headquarters of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary at West Hill, an imposing building which, for some time now, has dominated the city's skyline. This was the first occasion on which a member of the royal family has opened such an establishment. The Princess arrived in a helicopter at Peter Simmons School, watched by a large crowd gathered round the outer playing field. She was greeted by Lord Ashburton, Lord Lieutenant of the County, and she was then driven through the city along routes lined with spectators, many of whom had stood for a number of hours before she arrived. On arrival at the new headquarters, the Princess was again received by the Lord Lieutenant. Her Royal Highness inspected a guard of honour of women police. A march past was then led by representative contingents of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary. Moving inside, the Princess was taken on a tour of all departments. She was informal throughout and spoke to nearly all the men and women whom she met. The unveiling of a plaque at the entrance to the building was absent of speeches. After spending over an hour in Winchester, the Princess travelled to Eastleigh by road for a civic luncheon in the town hall before opening a new youth centre. And there are three black and white photographs, one of the Lord Lieutenant greeting Princess Margaret as she alights from the helicopter, a group of police lightweight motorcyclists doing a drive past, really a ride past, and Princess Margaret with the then Chief Constable Douglas Osmond inspecting the new photographic department with a camera that these days looks extremely historic, I have to say. Now we move on to Chronicle comment in first person. Nikki.
And this is headed Time for a Debate on High Street Rents. A leading businessman has this week spoken out about his fears for the future of Winchester's high street shops. Jeremy France, who has been one of the city's most successful independent entrepreneurs for more than 20 years, ought to know a thing or two about the retail sector. Mr. France, who is also currently chairman of the Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, has commissioned his own independent report about the possible effects of the £100 million Silver Hill redevelopment. It warns, he says, of an exodus of shops from the high street to the new development, leaving empty units behind. While he welcomes the much-needed Silver Hill revamp, Mr. France says it is time for retail landlords in the city centre to think again about the high rents many are charging. There is already a small but steady trend of businesses moving out, blaming high rents. Winchester must retain a vibrant high street when Silver Hill is eventually built, but landlords have a vital part to play in helping to make Winchester a shopping destination for the benefit of everyone. In a nutshell, it is time for a reality check.
First person this week is written by Khalid Aziz, and he entitles it excuse me, "Soak the Rich and We All Get Wet." When politicians start talking about new taxes on the rich, party conference season cannot be far away. So it was no surprise to hear Nick Clegg announce a new one-off tax for the wealthy, even if it surprised his House of Lords Treasury spokesman, Susan, I'll be interested to hear the detail, Cramer, prompting her interviewer to opine that it was slightly strange she hadn't been consulted by her great leader. Of course, offering to cut the purses of the rich is nothing new. Used to be the sole preserve of mountebanks and highwaymen until the law forced them out of business. Their trade was swiftly taken up by the lawmakers themselves, who set to devising legal means of helping the state to citizens' money. It was William Pitt the Younger who in 1799 introduced the first income tax, just 10%, as a temporary measure, designed to fund the war against Napoleon. Of course, it was too good for politicians of the day to give it up, so it stayed. Nearly 200 years later, in 1974, bushy-eyebrowed Labour Chancellor Dennis Healey trumpeted his 75% top rate, aimed at squeezing the rich, quote, until the pips squeak, unquote. Although he was talking mainly of property speculators, as it's always good to have a crack at property ownership for good measure. So what are we to make of Mr. Clegg's latest example of thinking out loud? Well, if he ever did get his way, you can put money on the tax not being temporary, even with Lib Dem cheerleader Simon Hughes soothingly announcing that he could see the tax being around for just a few years until we are through the worst of the recession. Remember Pitt and his temporary income tax. Of course, this is just another go at the ill-fated mansion tax. I should declare an interest, as I live in a house which would probably come into the net of such a tax. So what would happen if I had to pay another tax linked to wealth or the value of my house, which accounts for the vast majority of my wealth anyway? Quite simply, I would have less money to spend on goods and services, which, coupled with others finding themselves in the same boat, would mean even more small businesses and self-employed tradesmen waiting even longer for things to pick up. As any fool know, it would mean the recession would go on longer. The coalition is running scared. Corporate taxation receipts are well down, based as they are on the condition of the economy a year ago. Things are slightly better now, so next year's receipts will be higher. What's needed now is measures to boost business, with tax cuts, particularly on the cost of employment, not rises. Allow businesses to keep more of the meagre profit they make. The trouble with soaking the rich is that everyone gets wet, as, quote, we are all in this together, unquote.
Thank you. Now we're back to items of general news, Bobby.
And, of course, what's been hogging the headlines this week is the Alsford Show. Showcasing the best of country living, it says. While many country shows are becoming increasingly commercialised, bearing only a passing resemblance to what they once were, there is a notable exception. The Alsford and District Agricultural Society, now more than 100 years old, held its annual show last Saturday. And what a show it was. Gloriously old school in many respects. By sticking to its roots, the Alsford Show has managed to stay traditional yet relevant. A fact confirmed by the hordes of people from all generations who flocked to Titchbourne Park at the weekend in a celebration of country life. Martin Waldron, a fitter and turner from Hursley, has attended several times over the years. I've always been in the countryside and it's always been important to me, he said. And the thing I like about this one is that it's large enough that there's plenty to see, but small enough that you don't get exhausted looking around it. Elaine G, who's Highland Cattle Iona, took first prize in the heifer in calf class, said, it's our third year showing now and it's just so friendly here. Everyone is in it together. Some other competitions aren't like that, and the public here are always very interested in the animals. And the main ring featured stalwarts such as the parade of prize-winning livestock, vintage farm machinery, and, as ever, an impressive showing of horses. With 70 craft exhibitors and more than 150 trade stands, there was literally something for everyone. Situated behind the members' enclosure, children delighted in climbing aboard some of the behemoth modern tractors on display, with many of their fathers appearing equally enchanted. And alongside the millions of pounds worth of modern farm machinery, Andrew Burney's demonstration of traditional hedge laying made for an intriguing juxtaposition. Mr. Burney, the owner of Copswork, which tends hedges throughout the South Downs National Park, said, "These methods go back to the Bronze Age. It's also totally sustainable, and there's no machine that can do it." Organiser Nina Biles said, "We just love this show because it's a lot of fun, and you can see that the kids really enjoy it. The weather was outstanding on Saturday, displaying the surrounding Hampshire countryside in its fullest splendour." Show Secretary Lily Collier-Knight estimated that attendance was roughly the same as last year at around 22,000. She said, "It was a very, very successful day. But it cannot possibly run without the enormous input we have from the volunteers who bring all kinds of expertise and help to the show." And as you can imagine, accompanying this, there are, wait for it, 14 photographs. Now, usually we are asked to describe them all, but we'll run out of time, and I couldn't possibly do justice to all that. But summarising, yes, there are dogs and owners of all shapes and sizes. Oh, wait a minute. The dogs are all shapes and sizes, not the owners. Beautiful horses, sheep, cows, children in the sandpit, enormous combine harvesters and trailers that you could almost live in. And there is Andy Burney demonstrating his traditional hedge laying, and Chris Matthews pole lathe turning. Obviously he's got a pole there on a lathe, and it looks as though he's turning it by a wound down string, a very old country craft if ever there was one. But yeah, it surely is a really great day out.
Slightly more mundane. Uni bucks trend as more students apply. More students are applying for places at the University of Winchester despite the near tripling of tuition fees. Figures provided by the university show there were 8,566 applications from England and other EU countries, compared with 8,177 in 2010, before changes to the funding regime were announced. However, in line with the national trend, applications for places on degree courses fell slightly compared to 2011. Figures published last July by UCAS, the Universities and College Admission Service, show that applications from 18-year-olds who want places on degree courses are down overall by 1%. Tuition fees at the University of Winchester have increased from around £3,300 in 2010 to £8,600 a year in 2012. However, those from poorer families qualify for a means-tested bursary from the university, which softens the blow of the massive hike in fees. On average, fees are £7,500, including bursary support. A university spokesman said, "There has been a slight reduction in 2012 compared to 2011, but it should be noted 2011 was a record year and our application numbers for 2012 are significantly higher than in 2010. There were few applications deferring in 2011, no doubt to get in before the higher fees impacted, but this has now returned to a level consistent with 2009 and 2010 entries. Winchester has also seen an increase in applications from overseas students, who were already paying fees of about £9,000 from 525 in 2010 to 540 this year.
You may not be familiar with the name Barry West, but you're probably familiar with the man, because he bows out now after 50 years at the Co-op in Alsford. And there is a wonderful picture of him surrounded by colleagues of several generations, saying goodbye to him at the Swan Hotel. He's hanging up his apron after 50 years' service. Barry West, who's 65, is leaving Alsford Co-op branch on West Street after working for the business in the town since the 1960s. The Co-op organised a party at the town's Swan Hotel last Wednesday to mark the milestone. Stuart Heaton, Co-op Area Operations Manager, said, "We're very proud to have had Barry, not only the Co-op, but also Alsford, the town. His loyalty and commitment to the store and the town has been fantastic and very rare these days."
Two become one as Methodists join forces. The Winchester Methodist Circuit amalgamated on September the 1st with the Eastleigh Methodist Circuit. The new Winchester and Eastleigh Methodist Circuit will have 11 churches, 5 full-time ministers and over 1,000 members. The Reverend Peter Cornick, the new superintendent, said, "Much love, discussion, concern and prayer had been involved in establishing the new circuit, which spreads from Medstead and Alsford in the east to King Somborne in the west and down to Colden Common and Eastleigh." He paid tribute to the circuit stewards and ministers of the previous two circuits for their hard work and commitment. Some 350 people filled Chandler's Ford Methodist Church for the inaugural service on Sunday the September 2nd in the presence of the district chairman, the Reverend Dr. Andrew Wood, who was the preacher, and the Reverend Claire Downing, moderator of the URC Wessex Synod, and the special guest, the new Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin. Reverend Cornick led the members of the new circuit in a very special service of worship, fellowship and commitment. The evening began with good traditional Methodist tea and fellowship, followed by the service attended by members from all the churches, the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester City and Eastleigh Borough Councils, and representatives of the Ecumenical Partners. A multimedia presentation of mission activities in all the churches created a foundation for the commissioning of the new circuit. The service included a time of welcome to the new probationer minister, the Reverend Andrew Bird, who will be based at St Andrew's Methodist Church, Eastleigh, a commitment by the whole congregation to the future of the circuit. Methodists are known for their love of singing, and this was no exception. The old and new worship songs and hymns helped the worship to be personal and challenging. Ruth Johnson, the senior circuit steward of the new circuit, said, "This has been an inspirational evening, and the whole circuit is conscious of moving forward in mission and service to its new area." And accompanying the article is a photograph of all the leading participants.
Teenagers attacked by man in street. A teenager lost 2 front teeth in an unprovoked attack in a village near Winchester. Police are appealing for witnesses following the incident in Grattan Close, Sutton Scotney, last Saturday between 12:30 a.m. and 1 a.m. The victims, an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old boy, were walking home from a friend's house when they were approached by an unknown man who assaulted the 18-year-old man, resulting in 2 of his teeth being knocked out, cuts and bruises. While trying to stop the assault, the 16-year-old was also hit, leaving him with bruises. The attacker is white, aged 30 to 40, about 6 foot tall, of stocky build, and with short brown hair. He was wearing a horizontally striped white and yellow polo shirt. PC Dominic Doyle from Winchester Police Station said, "Sutton Scotney is a very safe and close-knit community, and incidents like this are extremely rare. I believe that someone will know the identity of the suspect, who may be a local man. Anyone with information should call PC Doyle by phoning 101. Information can be given anonymously by calling the Crime Stoppers charity on 0800 555 111.
A helicopter was forced to make an emergency landing in South Wanston. The RAF Chinook landed in a field close to houses in Wright's Way on Sunday. The helicopter was returning from the Bournemouth Air Festival and was on its way to RAF Odium when it ran into difficulties at 4:20 p.m. A spokesman for the Royal Air Force said the landing was a precautionary measure after a warning light was illuminated in the cockpit. The engines were shut down after the aircraft had landed in accordance with normal operating procedures. There were no reported injuries, and the machine was guarded by military personnel overnight, with residents bringing tea and cakes to crew during the day. John Whiting, aged 69, of Downs Road, was one of the first people on the scene. He said, "Terry, a local farmer, came knocking at my door and told me to grab my camera and come with him. We went down in the 4x4 and we were chatting to the crew. Then the crowd started arriving and there were kids climbing aboard and having a look round." Dave Francis, aged 48, of Wright's Way, said the Chinook appeared to pass about 30 feet from the nearest house. He added, "The whole house was shaking. My wife thought the windows were going to explode." Shirley Llewellyn, of Wright's Way, said, "We were sitting in the conservatory and heard it coming, and my husband said, 'He's low.'" The RAF's Chinook fleet is based in Hampshire, and low flying is a routine activity. Engineers finished working on the aircraft at about 5 p.m. on Monday when the Chinook returned to its base. And there is a little picture of it sitting in the field in South Wanston.
Missed hospital appointments are costing the NHS £5 million a year. Thousands of patients fail to turn up. Missed appointments are costing Hampshire hospital bosses more than £5 million a year, the latest figures have revealed. More than 35,000 patients failed to turn up for appointments at either Southampton General Hospital or the Princess Anne Hospital between April 2011 and March this year. Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare NHS Trust, which formerly ran the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, saw 10,000 missed appointments between April and December 2011. The figures have been unveiled as the government urges hospitals across the country to start using the latest technology to come up with innovative ways to crack down on the money-draining problem. These latest figures, recording did not attends, DNA, have shown that 8.7% of all appointments at University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust hospitals were missed, costing the trust, which needs to save £100 million by 2015, costing them almost £4.5 million. That is based on government figures which estimate that each missed hospital appointment costs an average of £126 in wasted resources, including specialist equipment being booked, translators arranged, and time spent by doctors, nurses, and administrative staff waiting for patients who don't turn up. Between April 2011 and March 2012, 11,515 first appointments were missed by patients in Southampton, and 24,077 follow-up or check-up and monitor appointments were missed, despite the Trust having an online cancellation form and text message reminders to patients in several departments. This compares to 9,291 missed appointments for Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare NH Trust between April and December last year, 6.7% of all appointments at a cost of £1.1 million. The NHS as a whole made good progress last year to reduce the number of missed outpatients appointments by more than 250,000 against a background of rising demand. More than 800,000 more patients had an appointment. However, during 2011-12, there were still about 5.5 million missed appointments in the NHS. Overall, the NHS carried out nearly 53 million outpatient appointments, meaning more than 1 in 10 were DNAs, did not turn up.
And this is headed Snapshots, and it is an engraving, a picture rather, of an engraving of Jury Street in the early 19th century, when it was known as Jail Street, showing the prison from which the road took its name, along with the prison governor's house. I just have to say, it is unrecognisable to the Jury Street we know now. Extremely grand, with columns and colonnades and set back from the road, which makes the whole road wider, not a restaurant in sight. So I'll continue with what it says. The prison was built in a style of great magnificence and strength under the direction of Mr. Moneypenny, an architect celebrated for several other erections of the same kind. The replacement prison in Rumsey Road was built in the late 1840s, and the centre part of Jury Street acquired by the Congregationalists, who built their church there in 1853. About the same time, the County Museum was moved from Hyde Street to the old prisoner governor's house. And just going back to the picture, there isn't a car in sight. Elegant people walking along looking like the cast from a Jane Austen film. Dogs, trees, and this empty road. It's quite wonderful. I can't explain it nearly well enough to you. Over to you, Graham.
No, not explaining that, but I've got beauty of another kind. It's stunning contemporary couture, inspired by nature. It's now on display at Modest Font. Kingfishers, golden eagles, woodpeckers, foxes and more provide the inspiration for the beautiful outfits which form the Worn to be Wild exhibition at the National Trust property near Romsey. The spectacular costumes were created by dress designer and textile artist Kate Plumtree. Her inspiration is the unusual combination of wild British birds and mammals and the evolution of period dress. Each costume has been carefully designed and constructed by observing the movement, character and habitat of each creature. The display includes a feathered 18th century swan, a dramatic 1930s golden eagle, a sultry Victorian fox, and many other creations. It also includes location photography and portfolios by the artist. There are even wildlife costumes for children to try on. Also currently on display at Modest Font is a Wind in the Willows exhibition featuring 32 original illustrations by E.H. Shepherd, which accompanied the much-loved book by Kenneth Graham. And both exhibitions run until September the 16th. And there is one of the dresses being modelled. It's by Kate Plumtree. She's probably not the model, but it's her design. It's called Kingfisher, and it's really quite splendid. It's all basically blue, and the bodice is embroidered, and the skirt is in sort of panels shaped in alternative shades of blue that spread out from the hips, and revealing an underskirt of yellows and orangey brown colours which swirl up underneath the feathers of the kingfisher. It's really quite splendid. There we are. Commentator on the catwalk. I think I'll stick to the day job.
Opening doors on our heritage. Winchester is opening the doors to several historical sites for free this week as part of Heritage Open Days. The annual event celebrates England's architecture and culture by offering access to places that are usually closed to the public or normally charge admission. People will have the chance to discover architectural treasures and enjoy a wide range of tours, events and activities that bring local history and culture to life. And this lasts until next Sunday, September the 9th. Among the highlights will be Winchester's five military museums in the Peninsula Barracks, opening on Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tours will run at 11 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. around the historic site, where William the Conqueror built a royal castle, which King Charles II then chose for a royal palace. A medieval archer will visit the Westgate Museum on Saturday to talk about military life in the Middle Ages. And there will be brass rubbing, quizzes, child-sized armour and Tudor costume to try on from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. The privately owned Avington Park Gardens, overlooking the River Itchen, will be free to roam on Sunday from 2:30 to 5 p.m. And a guided tour of the mansion's staterooms will also be available. Hinton Ampner House and Garden near Cheriton, the vision of Ralph Dutton, the 8th and last Lord of Sherborne, contains his collection of Georgian and Regency furniture, Italian pictures and impressive artworks, with a garden offering expansive views. Built in the 12th century, Winchester's oldest parish church, St John the Baptist's, situated on the ancient Pilgrim's Way, will be open Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and on Sunday from 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. Hockley Watermill in Twyford will be open on Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. giving guided tours of the 1803 water-driven cornmill with a working wheel. Formerly the 12th century church of Peter upon Chesil, the Chesil Theatre, will open Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. with members of the Winchester Dramatic Society present to answer questions. The Theatre Royal, which began as the Market Hotel in 1850 and opened as a theatre in 1904, will also be running theatre and backstage tours throughout Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. So there's plenty going on. To highlight again, there's the Peninsula Barracks to visit. There's the castle, medieval archer at the Westgate Museum, Avington Park House and Gardens, Hinton Ampner House and Garden in Cheriton, Hockley Watermill, St John the Baptist Church, and the Church of Peter upon Chesil, which is now the Chesil Theatre. So take your pick. Oh, and the Theatre Royal, of course.
Headed fined £1,300 for putting mobile home in field. Magistrates in Winchester have fined a Sparshall resident for flouting a planning enforcement notice. Michael Lee was fined £1,300 and ordered to pay costs of £458. Winchester City Council issued the notice when Lee sited a mobile home on land that he owned in Ham Green, Sparshall, without planning permission. He argued that he needed to live there to run his alpaca rearing business, but a government inspector ruled that there was no justification for him to reside there. The mobile home was required to be removed by February the 29th this year, but subsequent inspections by the council enforcement team showed that the mobile home remained and was occupied. In court, Lee pleaded guilty to breaking the enforcement notice. Councillor Victoria Weston, portfolio holder for planning and transport, said, "The decision by Mr. Lee to move a residential mobile home onto land without planning permission has proved costly. The planning regulations are there to protect the countryside from development which doesn't need to be located there, and the council would take robust action against those individuals who occupy land without permission." Lee had previously been found guilty of failing to comply with a stop notice, which was served on the mobile home when it was first brought to the land. Further legal action could be instigated against him should he fail to comply with the requirement of the notice. The council could instruct contractors to remove the home and charge the costs to Lee.
Well, on the same day as, but certainly not eclipsed by, the Oxford Agricultural Show is the Littleton and Harestock Show. And its programme challenged people to see if they could visit everything at the show. We can't boast 14 pictures, like the Oxford Show, but we can boast 12. And there's some very jolly pictures indeed, of a very different character. No big combine harvesters and tractors and all that, but lots of people enjoying themselves. And it says they looked a little daunting task on Saturday, that's to get round everything, at the recreation ground. It was packed with a mini tennis court, bowls, croquet, ferret racing, archery, and a treasure hunt, to name but a few. Thirsty work, just as well then that the WIT's stand was on hand, doing a roaring trade throughout the day. There was no end of food on offer, including Blackers, barbecue, cake stalls, and traditional ice cream sellers. This is an event that prides itself in being a traditional English village show. Families sat on the grass enjoying cakes washed down with real ale, while younger children caught a ride on the miniature steam train, and older children also let off steam at the crockery smashing stall. All this to the accompanying sound of the Barton Stacey Trad Jazz Band. Chris Townend, aged 77, and his wife Roz, 72, of Week, have been going to this show for as long as it has existed. Mr. Townend said, "I think the band is great, and I always like to see the cadets too, because I was involved with them myself many years ago." Organisers of the show say they like to include something a little bit different each year. This year, one thing in particular stood out. A 24-foot climbing wall towered over proceedings. Throughout the day, there was always somebody on it and always a queue in front of it. Let's hope not falling off it. Tom Sherwood, age 33, an engineer from Eastleigh, said, "My two kids have been on it. I don't think I've seen one at a fete before. Haven't been to the Watercress Festival, have they?" It's a really good idea to include something exciting like that for the kids. Bert Spencer, chairman of the Littleton and Harestock Show Society, said, "We try different things each year, and there's a lot here this year that we've not had before. We've been overflowing with the car parking, so you can tell from that that it's definitely been a successful show. Another good year then for Littleton and Harestock." Whether or not anybody was actually successful in visiting every stall and activity, they would have had fun trying. And there's a wonderful picture of crowds gathering on the recreation ground, sitting out on the provided chairs, the gazebo in the background, probably watching it's next to it. The bass player from the Jubilee Trad Jazz Band. And there's a small child called Poppy, aged 5 months, who's the great-niece of Liz Carmichael, who's holding her. And on the train, with a group of youngsters sitting astride little carriages. And a wonderful picture of someone called Mark Kettle, who's gallantly put his head through the stocks and having wet sponges thrown at him. And there's some family pictures and some joyful children. Ruby Berry, age 5, and William Beryl, 7. Patrick Hewson, 7, and Eloise Hewson, 5, enjoying the festivities. They're all leaping up and down merrily. And they've obviously been at the face painting stall. And there was another little lad, 16 months, dancing to the music of Van Morrison. More large pictures of people sitting around. Oh, and Harry Day, age 7, who's on the climbing wall, looking very intent and determined to get to the top. And Rory Holm, age 9, playing croquet. And Ben Broughton, who's 9, on the coconut shy, about to launch the ball at the coconut. Obviously, a splendid family day.
Campaigners for new sports facilities in Winchester hope a track-to-track relay from the Paralympics to the city this Sunday will help galvanise public support. The relay at the conclusion of the Paralympics will see a baton carried 100 miles through the night to the University of Winchester's Bar End Stadium. Starting at 1 a.m. at the East London Olympic Park, more than 40 relay runners will take turns to carry a baton to Winchester. The baton will contain a scroll summarising a public petition for a new community sports and leisure centre in Winchester. Emma Black, director of Fit for the Future, a local voluntary group which organised the petition, said, "Winchester is a very active community with lots of successful sports clubs, several of which have long waiting lists. But many of the facilities are outdated, some urgently need repair, and few meet competition standards." And she added, "We desperately need a multi-sport centre that can serve everyone, whether they're new to the exercise or aiming for the next Olympics." The 100-mile relay route, organised by Winchester and District Athletic Club, follows the Thames, then the Wey Navigation and Basingstoke Canal, before turning south and continuing on minor roads until it reaches Winchester. There, the baton will even be carried a length in St Swithin's school pool before continuing into the city and to its final destination at the 100 metres straight of the athletics track in the athletics stadium. Runners include top Winchester-based international athlete Louise Damon, torchbearers Neil Barker and Team GB ultra runner Sandra Bowers, Winchester MP Steve Bryan is supporting the event and will be handed the baton as it crosses the finish line. Miss Damon, who narrowly missed out on running the marathon for Team GB at the Olympics, said, "It would be fantastic to use the momentum of London 2012 to create a sporting legacy here in Winchester. A new multidiscipline sports facility would inspire future champions, as well as enabling the benefits of sport and leisure to be enjoyed by the wider community." And the baton is due to arrive at the Bar End Athletics track at around 5 p.m. with activity stalls and refreshments available on site.
So, what's the secret of Wajih's success at just 14? And Wajih is spelled W-A-J-I-H, which I think makes it easier. Reading through his impressive list of academic achievements, it's difficult not to take it with a pinch of salt when Wajih Ahmed's parents reveal how his incredible journey began. A set of coloured balls, a mere toy for most children, turned into an educational tool that would later propel the gifted youngster to a string of record-breaking grades. As a toddler, Wajid's parents, Saadia and Usman, who live in Chandler's Ford, would encourage their son to count the balls rather than just bouncing them. They would move the toys around, adding and subtracting the number of balls visible to Wajid and get him to count them. It was only basic mathematics, but as intelligent people themselves, Saadia and Usman, knew that grasping the logic of the subject at an early age would stand their son in good stead in his other studies. She says, "My husband has always been good at maths, so when Wajid was small, we used to introduce the concepts of adding and subtracting while he played, getting him to count the number of balls and things like that," Saadia explains. "Once you grasp the logic of maths, that can really help you out in other subjects. Then we started slowly getting books for Wajid for him to do maths puzzles, so it was all a very casual thing at that stage, and we had no thoughts of him doing any exams early. But by the time he was 8, we realised that he was working from books that were GCSE level and decided to put him forward for the exam. We never expected him to get an A star, but when he did, he just wanted to do more and more, and that's exactly what he did. Following his A-level results last month, Wajid can now boast a mix of A-star and A-grades in maths, further maths, chemistry and physics, as well as AS economics, the subject he will study at the University of Southampton starting this month. Add to that a clutch of A-star grades at GCSE level, and the Barton Peveril pupil's achievements are quite something. His parents put those achievements down to hard work rather than genetics. And indeed, they have used the same teaching methods on their younger son, Zoaib, 12, who is himself aiming to follow his brother's footsteps by becoming a university student in 2 years' time. But in response to outsiders who may label them as pushy parents, Saadia and Usman were defiant. "We have heard those criticisms, but I always tell people that he doesn't just study all the time," Saadia said. "He goes out, he plays football with his friends, but he just has that focus and determination to come home and study afterwards. He does everything his friends do. It's just that little bit of extra time he dedicates to his studies that sets him apart. But other than that, he's as normal as any other 14-year-old. And that word, normal, is certainly not misused. Wajid plays football regularly. He loves his Xbox, and he was glued to the Olympic Games this summer, just as any other teenage boy was." Saadia, 40, explains how her eldest son is a bit of a dab hand in the kitchen too. "He's really good at scrambled eggs," she said. "He always cooks his own scrambled eggs, even if I'm making them for everyone. And he helps out with chores around the house too, even if he does need asking twice sometimes." As for Wajid, while he will not be escaping the household chores just yet, he has already set his sights on moving to another part of the country to do a PhD following the completion of his degree in Southampton, which will allow him to make up for university experience he is missing out on this time round. "University is definitely going to be harder," he said, "but I have 3 years to concentrate on one subject now, working at the same place as everyone else, same pace as everyone else. That will be good, and I'm really looking forward to it." And with such a disciplined attitude, warm personality and a supportive family around him, you wouldn't bet against Wajid scoring top marks again when he enrolls at the university this month. And there's a great picture of him leaning on a pile of books, which are calculus and analytic geometry, advanced engineering, mathematics, GCSE maths, and then one on here that says chemical storylines. And he's sitting there doing the thumbs up on this pile of books, and just below is a picture of him aged 10, waving his A grade at maths certificate. Well done, Wajid.
There's another festive occasion. It's not has a rather shorter history than the other two shows, but it's the residents of a Winchester neighbourhood who held their third annual street party to help foster community spirit. Cathedral View in Highcliffe was closed to traffic as tables, chairs and gazebos filled the carriageway. Some 120 residents from the old Highcliffe roads of Cathedral View, St Catherine's Road, Canute Road and Highcliffe Road were invited along to meet the neighbours. One of the organisers, Vivian Austin, said, "I think it was the best one we held. There have been quite a few new residents during the past year and everyone enjoyed getting to know each other. They held a barbecue, staged street games, and there was a trampoline, table football, face painting, glitter tattoos, and, of course, music. The event is held in memory of lifelong Saints fan and Cathedral View resident Dennis Kimber, who died in 2009 and first suggested the party idea. Vivienne added, Dennis would have been thrilled to see his idea celebrated every year. She thanked the City Council and Neville Crisp, traffic engineer, for their support. It's been really helpful over the legal notices. They were quite encouraging. In some places, the councils can be quite difficult. And there's a very jolly picture of everybody assembled, from a toddler in a buggy to older residents around, all shouting, cheering, waving their hands. The annual street party in Highcliffe in memory of Dennis Kimber.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent. Goodbye. Do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please pop the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.